Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about everything from commas to characters to karma. Everything will be on the table because everything has to be on the table when you're writing. Nothing can be off limits except your own ceaseless curiosity. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and Author is funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their yearly conference, please go to pnwa.org. Well, you may have tuned in to listen to me chat with Andre Debuse, who was supposed to be my guest today, but unfortunately, Andre couldn't make it. But fortunately, I have with me today a novelist, poet, teacher, and marketing guru. I'm talking, of course, about the Pacific Northwest's very own Terry Persun. Terry, welcome to Author.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate this.
How are you doing?
I'm actually doing pretty well. I've got a happy life here, so.
I know. You are the ageless Terry Persun. I'm not going to give away your age, but every time I see you, you look just a little bit younger. I don't know what you do out on that farm of yours, but whatever it is, I want to get a dose of it. It's just remarkable.
It's good fertilizer.
It must be the fertilizer. Well, maybe that's it. You know, I'd like to start, if I could. I want to tell a little story about the time I met you for the first time. And you may or may not remember this, but I was at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference. I don't remember how many years ago it was. God, probably 10 years ago now. And I was there, and I was pitching a book. And I had just learned that I was going to publish a novel with a very tiny, tiny press. But I was pleased with it. It was my first book I was going to publish. But I was there pitching another book to, of course, editors at not-so-tiny presses. I think it was Simon & Schuster I was pitching to. And so I was there at a round table with a bunch of writers, and you were there also. And so, as you do at the conferences, everybody goes around and gives their little spiel. And when it came to your turn, you were very matter-of-fact in your pitch to this editor. You said, I guess you might have talked to her already. It's entirely possible since you were on the board. And you said you mentioned all the novels you had published with small presses. You mentioned poetry collections you had published. You talked about marketing. And I was very impressed with your professionalism and with your how at ease you seemed talking to her. And so I did my spiel, and as I had listened to you, I thought, I got to talk to this guy. I got to talk to him because he seems to know a thing or two, and I know diddly squat. And so I was a little nervous because I didn't know anybody at the conference, but I kind of hunted you down. And I went up and I introduced myself and I explained what was going on and how I was going to try. I'd gotten this novel published and I didn't know what to do now. And you were so generous with your time and with your advice. And you even, I think I called you up, you gave me your phone number. And after the conference, I called you up and we talked for like an hour about just what you do now that you've published something with a small press that doesn't have a big marketing department and it's all on your own. And I was so, I wouldn't say overwhelmed, but I was so pleased and gratified to have this conversation with someone who was so generous with his time and his advice. And it was my first taste of what I have found to be very common within the writing community, which is a kind of generosity that just keeps flowing and flowing from one writer to another. And that first taste I got with you has really continued throughout my writing career and up through Author and so on. So thank you for that, Terry. And I'm thrilled to have you on now on the show.
Thank you. That's really nice to say. And I agree with you 100%. This is the one business I've ever been in where everyone seems to want to help everyone else. Involved and as sort of your success as we are of our own. And there's something about it. I think it's that creativity or just knowing how much you love to do this that you want everybody to share in it, no matter how that is. And if you're published and you're writing and you're doing what you love to do and I'm doing what I love to do, when we come together, it can't be anything but great. And so I think you're right. A lot of the people I meet in this business are just phenomenal. And it's funny because you think that the best-selling authors and, you know, the people that are making a lot of money and going everywhere and doing all these great things, you think they're going to be a little snobbier than they are.
Right.
But they're such down-to-earth, wonderful people. And, again, like you said, they'll help you. I mean, I've talked to, well, so have you. We've talked to so many best-selling authors who come to the conference, and they'll sit at the same table with you and talk to you as though you're a peer. And I suppose we are in the sense that we're all creating. But you're right, it's great.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, it was my father. Years ago, I was writing my first novel, and I wasn't even writing a book. I just needed, I think I was trying to get a loan or something like that. I can't remember what it was. He said, go do an informational interview with somebody. I said, what? He said, no, you know, go to somebody at a bank. Maybe I was writing my first book, and I had a banker in it, and I didn't know anything about bankers. I was a 24-year-old waiter at the time, I think. So he said, do an informational interview. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, people love to be interviewed. It's incredibly flattering. People don't, and it's really true. I have to hand it to him. People don't get a chance to sit down with somebody else that often and talk about the thing they love to do. You know?
Yeah.
You love to write. I love to write. But does your wife really want to hear about your writing all the time?
Probably not.
No, she doesn't. And even my wife, who writes, doesn't really want to hear about it all the time. And so when you come to a writer who has maybe more experience than you do or has sold more books or whatever, if you're not coming to them purely to get something from them, just, you know, coming to them to say, here, read my manuscript, you know, which is kind of an odious experience for everybody. But if you come to them just to seek their counsel, honestly, then or just to just get their companionship, almost always they're willing to share it because it's a great opportunity. Usually they're alone with it. They don't actually get to share what they've learned and what they love, except maybe on the page and with themselves. I've certainly found it to be the case in the interviews I do.
Yeah,
you know, writers love to talk about it, love to talk about what they've gone through, especially if the person they're talking to seems to know something about it also.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a nice exchange of information, I guess. Yeah.
Now, Terry, I know I've had the pleasure of meeting your daughter, Nicole, who a very together young woman, and she's recently graduated from high school, did she not?
Right. Yeah.
And she is a writer herself.
Yes.
So how is that for you? She's not your only child, I don't believe.
No.
She's the only one I've met, though.
Right. Yeah, my I have two boys, and they're both out of the house and married.
Right.
So, and living elsewhere. And so Nicole's the only one here. And
is she the only one who writes regularly?
Yes.
So yeah. How's that?
You know, it's interesting. Early on when she started, I wasn't sure whether she really wanted to or she was going to continue or not. You know, she was asking questions, do I have books on writing and things like that. And of course,
right.
I have like 300 of them sitting there, as we all probably do.
Yeah.
So I gave her a couple books and didn't expect much from that. But then she read the books, and she started to analyze the books she was reading and keeping notes and asking questions, very pertinent, very useful questions. And so I took her to the PNWA a couple of years ago for the first time, and I told my wife when I took Nicole that I said, there's a good chance that she's going to go in there and, you know, some of these people can be pretty slow when they're talking about, you know, character development or whatever it is because it's so focused.
Yeah.
And it's an hour and a half on this one tiny subject almost.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, we'll find out how interested she is now because, you know, she's going to have to sit in a class. And I honestly expected her to walk out of some of the classes and go, geez, I can't do that. I almost fell asleep or this or
right.
that. Just the opposite happened. Some of the people I thought would have put me to sleep, she comes out and says, oh, my God, this was so great. I had so much fun, and this is what I learned, and she's just so excited about it. So after that, I knew that she was serious.
Yeah.
And when she was that serious, then we started to talk about commitment and time, because that's, as we all know, that's really what it takes. If I don't write 2 hours in the morning, I'm lost the rest of the day.
Right.
Or, you know, what's the saying? You know, if you miss a day of writing, you notice it, and if you miss 2 days, your editor notices
yeah,
it.
That's right.
If you miss 3 days, your reader notices it.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of attitude you have to have.
Why
you
do
have
you think that
up.
Is? I absolutely agree with that, Terry. And why do you think that? I mean, it's not true of every single writer. There are some who can go for stretches, but I've certainly found that to be the case for me. Are you a 7 day a week person or a 5 day a week person?
Oh no, I'm a 7 day.
Okay.
Yeah,
I've always been a 5 day yeah. guy. But why do you think that is?
You know, I really don't. I don't know if I can answer that question and feel comfortable with the answer. I can guess. I can guess that for me, you know, it changes my attitude and my mood when I'm not working. And so after a couple of days, you start to get irritable, and you don't think the same way. You don't have the same flow. There's something about it that's disconnected. And I think what happens, though, now just to say the opposite in this conversation. The other thing is though, you know, and I know that when you sit down and you rewrite, you have another opportunity to make it flow. You have another opportunity to make the pieces together
the piece
and
flow,
fit
yeah.
properly. And so maybe that's the case for the first draft, but then you get to rewrite it and rewrite it. And if your rewriting is strong enough and you can sit down and focus clearly, I think we're probably okay. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe what that idea is a comment on focus. Because right now, with the way life is, right, Twitter and Facebook and all the other things, family, job, writing, your focus isn't as defined as I think it used to be. And I find that even when I write every day, there are days when I don't focus as well as other days.
Sure. You know, but I'm thinking about it. I just was watching this little excerpt on the internet by the teacher and writer Eckhart Tolle, who I think is just great. And he
yeah.
was talking about creativity. And he said something I thought really interesting, and something that I've been getting at around in my blogs a lot since I started writing in a way. But he said it so well, which is he was talking about focus, actually, and how when a soccer player is going to try and like do a free kick, the soccer player who the referee blows the whistle, and then the soccer player then the player can make the kick. The player who takes a second to gather himself or herself before making the kick, as opposed to the player who kicks immediately, the player who takes a moment to gather his focus or her focus has a much higher chance of scoring. And Tolle talked about that what you're doing at that moment is you are going to inside yourself to this sort of stillness within yourself, which is the source of your creativity, and that is the source of all your creative actions. And he said the reason he was talking about himself, I wouldn't score a goal if I focused, is because I don't know how to play soccer. He says you have to prepare your instrument for the source of the creativity. And I think that as writers, it's very meditative, I've always thought, even though I myself don't meditate. That is our chance to go within to that source of creativity, having practiced and practiced and practiced, like the soccer player or the jazz musician or whoever, our instrument, so that we can release it more effortlessly. But for me, it's that chance to get very still and very quiet and contact to the best of my ability and listen to the best of my ability, the source of the creative impulse, which I think never stops flowing within us, you know, but never in such a focused way, for me at least, as when I'm writing.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think writing is very meditative, too, and I do meditate. But there are times, well, I think any writer knows, there are times when you don't know where you are, who you are, what the weather is, you know.
Yeah.
There, I often listen to writers say, oh, it would be so nice to be able to have a place on the beach where I can look out at the water and or the mountains or whatever and write from that space. And I think, my God, when I'm writing, I am so in the space where I am writing
yeah.
from that I can't even see outside. I don't think I hear some days.
You don't
know,
want to. You know you're going well if you can't see it.
Right.
You can't remember anything. That's
exactly.
for me, for sure.
Yep, me too. And so it doesn't matter if I'm facing a wall. Because
oh,
my
in fact,
world
that's what E.L. Doctorow writes
me.
Facing a wall. I know he writes facing a blank wall, and I totally understand that. I used to think, oh, I should be staring out a window or something. But no, I've always just wrote facing the most bland, you know, vista I can because I want to go inside. That's
yeah,
where it all
exactly.
is.
That's right. That's where you're writing from. And so it is very meditative in that sense. You know, you cut everything else out. And there's something, and maybe that's why it's so wonderful, why we love it so much, because we are totally in this other world. You know, we're not in this physical world we're in right now at all. So in that sense, you know, all your bills, all your problems, all your complaints, everything falls away.
It has to. I think it has to in order to write well. Because
yeah.
all that stuff, write well, I don't like to use that term, but if you want to write something truly compelling, all that stuff you mentioned is all on the surface. It's all the surface stuff. And life, in its beauty and its, I think, reality, exists far beneath the surface of the argument you had today and the bills you have to pay and who's going to be
yeah.
the Republican nominee and all this kind of, you know, that's all, I mean,
yep.
it's all going on and it's a part, and that's certainly, I think, reflective of all that's happening beneath the surface, you know, like the tip of the iceberg, but certainly life itself exists in its truest form, I think, far below that. And that's, for
yeah.
me, what I'm searching for when I write.
Yeah, me too. And so, talking about that, and in the writing process, I continually talk with people about, you know, are they writing this kind of book or that kind of book or poetry
yeah.
or nonfiction. I think that when you explore all those areas, that's when you start to really dig deep into whatever's inside you. Writing poetry sometimes or reading poetry sometimes helps you use metaphor and simile. It helps you create a larger picture in the books you do write. I think reading and writing genre-type fiction teaches you a methodology that you wouldn't normally have, so that even when you have a literary novel, you know how to be clear about the technology that they're using. I mean,
right.
it's so interesting. We're so connected to all these things at once these days, where a literary novel has to talk about the technology, just like a science fiction novel has to talk about the human condition.
Right, right. It's
right?
true. Yes, it's true.
Because this is where we live. I mean, all these things we do, any of the writing that we do, all fits into other writings that we do. And I think that's why most writers who I know read anything. They read across the board. They're reading,
yeah.
you know, memoirs and nonfiction and science fiction and literature. I go to the grocery store and pick up science magazines all the time just to see what's going on.
Yeah.
And
hey,
why
now,
not?
Speaking of which, this is interesting. I can't remember if I might have mentioned this the last show. But so I've interviewed all these authors. I don't normally ask them. I think I did mention this. I'm going to mention it to you anyway. I don't normally ask them who inspired them. You know, I don't like to usually ask that question, but it comes up sometimes, just sort of organically. And who do you think? And there's only one author that gets mentioned far and away more than any other author. Now, who do you think that is?
Wow,
it's a he, and he's an American author. It's not Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Who inspired novelists of all genres.
Oh, maybe Walt Whitman, huh?
No, Ray Bradbury.
Oh, Bradbury. Oh, of
Ray
course.
Bradbury. And okay. All the way from Alice Hoffman to Richard Bach to science fiction writers that have, yes, Ray Bradbury.
Yep.
And I suspect it's because he crosses, I mean, he's still alive, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think he is still alive. He's so,
yep.
I mean, yes, he's in science fiction, but what he does so crosses, is so fluid from, what is it really, you know? Because
yeah.
He simply has the trappings of the science fiction writer, but really, he's always about more than that.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
He's the one. Over and over again, he comes up.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah, I can see that, because you're right. He writes across the genres anyway. He always has.
Yeah.
And he'll attack anything. As a matter of fact, I remember reading stuff in that he's written in, like, Red Book and McCall's. Those are the kind of things. I mean, he's everywhere. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Pretty
interesting. And I agree with you about reading across genres. I know that poetry has meant a lot to me, has taught me in some ways maybe more than anything else in terms of the kind of writing, even though I live in the world of prose 99% of the time, poetry has taught me, I think, maybe more about writing in one way, at least in terms of what I wanted to do, because of the you don't think of this with poetry, but the economy of it,
right?
On one level, there's a great expression about that when in religion they say that God points you, that's all God can do is point you towards where you want to go. It's a direction. And I feel like poetry is the same way. Ideally, poetry points us towards where it is we hope to go. It doesn't want to try and put you there as much as possible, but it directs your attention fully towards where you want to go. I always find that with poetry. It taught me how, I think reading it really taught me how to write in a way that no other kind of writing ever taught me.
No, I agree 100%. Because what happens is you learn how to say so much in so few words.
Yeah.
And you could set an entire scene. You know, and as a matter of fact, this is the problem I have with some fantasy novels these days. They, you know, the 1,000-page ones sometimes have so much detail. I was reading something the other day, and I forget what it is now, but there was like page after page of detail in the sense that, you know, they're in a cabin and there's a desk and there's
filling it with the detail of the
Yeah, and there's so much of it in there that you forget the story. You know, you get to the next page and you think, no, what did he ask? You know, what was that question again?
Right.
And
yes.
I don't need all that. And, you know, this goes back to the way we originally learned to write, where they say, if it doesn't belong there for a reason, don't put it in.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of that. But there is a school of writing which is sort of like, and I think there are people who really enjoy reading this. I'm not one of them. But there is a school of thought which is like, teach me about the world, teach me how to dress a horse, teach me how to operate on a you know, carpal tunnel syndrome or something. I mean, that there's almost like an instructional quality to it. You know, this is how you. Yeah, I know that one of the complaints, for instance, about, and I've never actually read Moby Dick. You know, that's funny. It's the only book I've only had a D in English once in my life. And that was when I didn't read Moby Dick. I was assigned it, and I simply couldn't bring myself to read it. I was so bored by it. But the one complaint I've heard about Moby Dick is that from time to time it becomes a kind of dissertation on whaling.
Right.
Which is, I don't, have you ever read it?
Years and years ago, yeah.
Right, like
I don't remember. You know, it was when I was in college and I was reading, you know, two books a week, and so. You just read it at lunch and at night and at day, and, you know, half the time you wake up three pages after and you don't go back to reread them.
Right.
which is not the best way to be reading, but but that's what it forces on you when you're reading that much.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do think that I am not a fan of all that detail. I do think that you're better off summoning choosing the two or three details that insinuate instead of describing the entire room, the two to three details that tell us what the room feels like, and then we, the reader, will fill in the rest with our always active imagination, which I think was what makes writing such an intimate experience in the first place.
So do I. Yeah, because what you want to do is you want to get them into the same state that you were in when you were writing it.
Yes.
And you can't do that by giving them too much detail. I think you can do it really well with poetic images and similes, and it's kind of like walking around the elephant. So
yeah.
That you can see it from five directions. And so you can use some things that are juxtaposed to other images and really set the scene inside the reader, like
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
So that the reader feels what you're trying to make them feel. That's where it is anyway. We want them to feel it. I don't want to teach them anything, not in a novel. If I want to teach them something, I'll do a nonfiction book,
right.
like a small press book. You want to learn something? Here.
I
call it my hack book because, you know, you just sit down and you hack it out. And you say, this is what you need to know.
Right.
And you can do that in a 1-2-3 bullet format.
Right.
But when it comes to fiction, I want to know when I step in that room, is it scary?
Right. What does
or
it,
is it?
Yes, and that is a point, too, I should say, about description. This has been one of my, is that you're not describing what something looks like. You're describing what it feels like to be next to it.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It might be involved in size and shape and shadow, but it's who cares what it looks like? It's what it feels like. That's what human beings want to know. What does it feel like to be next to the woman you love? Not what does she just look like.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
what does
and
it
why
feel
is
like?
That? It's because we all like different things and dislike different things. You know,
right.
One person's going to see that dog walking up to him and it's going to look friendly, and another person is not going to look friendly. And what's going to happen is the entire scene will change for both those people.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, the person who doesn't trust dogs says, oh my God, I'm in an alley and the walls are high and I can't get out.
Yes.
Well, you know right away that they're nervous around this dog. Well, the other person will look at it totally different. They'll say, oh, my gosh, there was a direct line between me and the dog, right?
Yeah.
And they could run straight for me. And, you know, so you get this different sense about it at all. The light was coming in from the top and, you know.
You know what's
shining
fascinating, Terry, is I'm writing a memoir right now. And one of the things I have to do, it's an interesting exercise both in, of course, looking at my own life, which, you know, what a memoir is, and in writing, which is I will be writing a scene, and often all I'll have is one moment that I'll remember, you know, about this, you know, exchange between my son and me, say. But
yeah.
It'll feel poignant. And then I have to figure out, maybe figure out is not the right word, but I have to go discover why that was poignant. Because if I simply, you know, sometimes I'll start on the surface and I'll simply write what happened. And I'll go, my God, that doesn't feel like what happened to like what I felt when it happened at all. Did I imagine it? And I go, no, I didn't. So then I go back and search, and I have to, as a writer, recreate for you, the reader, my thoughts, my understanding of the world, the stories I told about why it was that moment had that effect on me. And in so doing, I learn. Not only can I hopefully recreate so you can sympathize and empathize with me, but I even discover what brought me to that moment in the first place. Because I often don't even realize, but I know I got there because I was there. How did I get there? And then I go in search of it.
That's pretty interesting. I like the way you explain that because I can see exactly what you're saying. And often, well, here we go. We go back to writing. They say, show, don't tell.
Right.
Well, sometimes that's not true. First of all, every novel I've ever read tell, and they don't
something.
Show
you
all
tell
the time.
Something.
Yeah, they always have to. But you're touching on that whole subject of, do we just show you what happened, or do we get you involved somehow?
We got to get you involved. Well, this is a great note for us to pause on. I can hear someone in my ear telling me our time is almost up. Terry, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It was really fun.
For our listeners, Sweet Song is out. You got to get that. It's a great book. And the other one is, I'm sorry, the science fiction novel is?
Cathedral of Dreams.
Cathedral of Dreams. Both are available, both e and on print, I assume?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yep.
Terry, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining me today. Next week, We will be joined by, who will it be? Oh, children's book author Bonnie Becker. Always a pleasure. Until then, remember, write what you love, do what you love. You really can't go wrong. Thanks again.